You know, James and I were recently in southern Florida where there was a confab of some really interesting Democrats and strategists and thinkers. And we had a number of interviews. I hope you'll catch them because they really, really were interesting. Hey, James, talk about an all-time favorite guest coming back. We have the favorite son of Louisiana. You were at best second.
That best.
Former mayor of New Orleans, former top White House aide. No one is smarter about American politics than the Honorable Mitch Landrieu. Mitch, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me in this beautiful setting. It's very nice.
It is great. And, you know, William F. Buckley, the great conservative, used to say that he wanted the Republicans to nominate the most electable conservative. And if somebody was more conservative but not electable, he didn't want them. Can you apply that to Democrats today? That you want to elect the most, electable progressive or whatever you say? And is that something that seeped through the party? Because there's some people that say, no, we're going to have litmus tests.
Well, it's not a purity test, and it's not about being right all the time. If you don't have power, you can't govern. And if you can't govern, you can't improve people's lives. It's just really that simple. And so winning, in order to be in a position of power, really, really matters. I think the country can now look at how really venal Donald Trump is. He has run for office. I call it the four C's: chaos, corruption, incompetence, and cruelty is essentially what he's doing. And he has basically said, he's actually said, not only through himself, but through Stephen Miller, look, power is everything. And if you have it, you can do whatever you want. And we've never seen anybody abuse their office that much. And he's using the power of the presidency in a way that's making America weak. It's making us militarily weak. It's making us weak with our allies across the world, which is increasing the chances of another world war, which is going to cause a taxi driver from Detroit's kid to go, spill his blood to preserve freedom like we did in the Greatest Generation. The economy is slipping. I mean, everything is heading in the wrong direction. And if you want to stop that, because that's what everybody says, what can I do? Well, we have to win. And in order to win, you have to have a good candidate. You have to have somebody that's authentic. You have to have somebody with a message that is actually responsive to the voters. Here's a big surprise for everybody that wants to run for office. If you want to win, you have to go ask people to vote for you. Yeah. And in order to get them to vote for you, you got to ask them what's important to them. And if it's important to them, you have to do something about it. And so we lost the last election. I mean, we got our ass kicked. We got it handed to us, and we're suffering the consequences, because of it. So from where I sit, we need to win first. And to whatever extent that the Democrats have arguments between and amongst themselves about whatever issues they think are important, they pale in comparison to what we're suffering under Donald Trump.
And Trump told the New York Times, the only thing that could stop me is my own morality. Now, that scared the crap out of me, but I think he meant mortality. I think he just misspoke.
Well, let's.
But he is everything you said. And talking about winning, Mitch, you've spent a lot of time thinking about why Democrats have slipped with working class voters and all over the
country. Yeah.
Is that message getting through? And what would you advise candidates now to do? Because that's just been.
Well, I'm not really trying to be a smartass here. I'm just saying that if you want to win, you got to get more votes than the other side.
That's
all right. And that's just it. That's just kind of basic.
Maybe a little bit more than a little bit.
Right. And we know what the voting universe is out there. We know who the people are. We have all these fancy technology and algorithms that can tell you who votes for who, when and how and what and where. And so just from my perspective, if you've been winning and you've been winning because certain people have been voting for you and then they quit voting for you, you might want to go ask them why, especially if you need them to win again.
Right.
And it turns out from the data, not that every coalition of the Democratic Party, the Republican Party is not important, but there is one specific cohort that sits out like a sore thumb that used to give the Democrats the margin of winning so that we can have power and enact policies that improve people's lives. And that is loosely identified now as working class folks. So first question people say, well, what does that really mean? What is working class and why'd you come up with that definition? And the answer is I didn't. When you ask people, what are you? They say, I'm a working class stiff. That's what I do. I get up early in the morning. I go to work with my hands. I make something or I help somebody. And I take a shower when I get home at night. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. And as a general rule, this cohort of people that the Democrats used to win, people that are making below $80,000 a year, we actually lost people that are making $50,000 a year for the first time in, I think, 40 years. I think if you run all the numbers, I don't think you can win without this group of people. Now, sometimes when you say working class in America, people hear white men. And that is true in some sense, but it is clearly not only that. Trump actually did better with African-American men, with Hispanic men and women who fall into the category of folks that are just working, you know, and humping every day, trying to put food on the table and support their kids. And those folks have told us, because we did go see them. That's just with the Working Class Project. Let's go see them. Let's go find out where they are. Let's go talk to them. And let's go, number one, show them the respect of asking them to vote for us, and then tell us what the hell's wrong with us and what is it you need in order for us to be the kind of people you want, you know, using our power to help lift you up. And so that's what we did. And, you know, these folks, it's kind of simple. They were like, you know what? You forgot me. You left me behind. I think the system's rigged against me. Whether it's people coming across the border illegally that are now here, that are getting things that I haven't gotten, if they were Hispanic and their families came, or if it was rich people who are getting a tax break and taking basically health care away because they're cutting Medicaid. This whole gamut is, you're not paying attention to me because I can't make ends meet. This is what they say. It used to be that there was an American dream, and the covenant, the promise that we had made to each other was that if you get up and you work hard, you work your ass off, you ought to be making enough money to buy yourself a house and to give your kids a better life than you have, and at least to make ends meet. And they're like, you know what? We're getting screwed. And they feel really bad about it. And they feel like the Democrats have left them behind. And we got to go figure out from them how we're going to make their lives more affordable, and how we're going to make their lives easier to lift their burden up so that they can realize that American dream again.
James, so Mayor, you've been working with folks a little bit on Minneapolis, and you were a mayor. I hear a turn, and I wish you would explain to what it means when you're a sanctuary city. That sounds something kind of bad. It doesn't have a good ring to it. What is that?
You won't be surprised to know that there is no definition of sanctuary city.
Okay.
Like if you ask Tom Holman,
right,
or Jeff Sessions, which I did, now maybe they've changed in the last year, what is a sanctuary city? I said, show it to me in the law. You're a lawyer. I'm a lawyer.
Okay.
Like, before you violate the law, there's got to be due notice. And so it's got to be written down. And if it's not written down, you can't really violate it.
Right. You can mean whatever you want.
Law.
Yeah. But
actually, that term was a biblical term that came from caring for your neighbor, providing sanctuary and comfort to people, food and clothes. It's kind of in the Bible. It's in the Beatitudes. And in Matthew, that's where it came from. They turned it on its head and basically said, oh, you know, these people in the cities are hiding criminals. I can tell you something. Here's another little secret that maybe Stephen Miller might want to think about. There is no mayor in America, not one, that if the federal government went to them and said, I want to help you fight crime on your street, and I want to put up $150 billion, and I'm going to make sure that the FBI, the DEA, the ATF, the police departments across America, mental health institutions, substance abuse, will focus on the front end of crime and the back end of crime so we can make it safe. Not one mayor in America would say, get out of my city. They would say, please come in and help me. But what happens is, if you talk to the major police chiefs, if you come down to a city, Minneapolis is a good example, they have 600 police officers, and you say to them, you have to stop fighting crime. You have to stop going after rapists and robbers and murderers, and you got to go protect ICE agents, which, by the way, are not properly hired and not properly trained, and you got to follow them around the city, and you can't go secure the rest of the city. You're making the city unsafe. And police chiefs are saying, that's not what police departments are supposed to be doing. And so the federal government gets upset about that, and they say, well, now we're going to take funds away from you that you use and to actually make the city safe, which is why this whole craziness of what the Border Patrol and ICE and the way they're handling themselves right now, acting as a rogue agency, it is really dangerous. The second reason it's a danger to all Americans, you can see of the deaths of these two individuals the other day. These folks that work for ICE and CBP who are on the ground have actually been told by the president, by Tom Holman, by Stephen Miller, by J.D. Vance, and by Kristi Noem, that number one, you have the power to do whatever you need to do to get the job done that we told you to do, even if it means using force. They essentially have given them a license to kill. And they've said, and we're not going to investigate you. And if we do, we're not going to hold you accountable. Anybody that's run, you know, you are a Marine, Semper Fi. You have to have the greatest Marines and the greatest law enforcement, well, folks that took their jobs responsibly and made sure that they did what they had to do in the right way. And if you're in local policing, you have to protect the Constitution, First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, which they now are saying doesn't exist either. And I think when Americans begin to understand that, their general opinion is they've gone too far now and they're out of control. So you got to fix it because we're not safer.
So you were mayor of New Orleans for 8 years. Just roughly, I don't know, of every NOPD officer, how many applicants did you have to reject for one reason or another?
A lot. Well, first of all, when I first got there, it took a long time to hire a police officer. It took like 13 months. And I spent time getting that down to 3 months. You got to go through that process really, really fast. And of course, you have to make sure that you weed out people that you think could potentially use force in the wrong way. Because the idea is never to shoot first and ask questions later. The idea is to de-escalate, to protect, to serve, and only shoot if you absolutely have to. And by the way, there are rules and regulations around that. So we weeded out a lot of people. What I'm really curious about, I don't know the answer, but you know, Stephen Miller can prove this. I'll bet you that a good number of the most recently hired ICE agents or Border Patrol agents actually came out of the Proud Boys or January Sixers. You know, those folks didn't come out of thin air. Where did they just immediately find, you know, so they could make everybody in the country comfortable that they hired the appropriate run of people. They also said that they followed their training. Well, I'd like to know what their training is, because if you train in my police department, you can't do what they did on the streets of Minneapolis. That is not what you would do. And if you did it, number one, you'd be put on administrative leave. Number two, there would be an open and transparent investigation done by another organization that's not, you know, responsible for it. It'd be the FBI. In this particular instance, in the first one, they said they weren't going to investigate at all. In the second one, they said that the agency that actually hired the people that did the shooting was going to investigate themselves. Now, you know, you don't put the, right. you know, you don't, right. you don't right. do that. And so I think the public is losing confidence. And if the public lose confidence in law enforcement, or they think that the president is turning the military on the people of the United States, then all of a sudden you get into a really dangerous territory where people start taking things into their own hands, and it can only lead to a violent confrontation that's going to lead to greater death. There's a smarter way to fix this immigration problem. We know what the answer is, and the president just won't do it because, you know, he's got a different way of seeing the world.
Mitch, you mentioned the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. There's a heavy dose of racism in this, too, and there was Stephen Miller.
No question about it. Well, I just think that's always been true. It's not the only thing.
Yeah.
But it clearly is a fear
today with the
there's no
theory about replacement.
I my family's been living this forever. James knows it as well as I do. Race is a real challenge for our country. You know, and people want to act like it wasn't, or that the history doesn't matter, or that we don't have it today. It's just not true. There is a genuine fear that a lot of white people have that somehow we're being replaced by these individuals that don't look like us, don't act like us, don't talk like us. So therefore, you know, they start making decisions based on race and class. You know, the United States, I don't know about your background, but I'm a mutt. I mean, I got English, I got French, I got Italian, I got German, I got African-American. I mean, I got the whole nine yards. And, you know, we're a nation of immigrants. Now, we ought to be a nation of legal immigration. The border ought to be something that we can control. We ought to get rid of whatever violent people in this country. But after that, I think you can make a good case that this country, the idea of this country, is that if you come here and you come right, that we're all equal. None of us are better than the other because you happen to be here longer or related to somebody else. Like J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance gave a really important speech not too long ago that should scare the hell out of people. He basically said that we're not a creedal nation, a nation based on the creed that all of us are created equal. He said, no, we're not that. Some of us are more equal than others if you've been here longer, right? Then all of a sudden that becomes a nation of blood and soil where people can claim hereditary rights. And that's really just not what the idea of America is.
We could have gotten rid of Alexander Hamilton.
That's exactly. Well, let me just say this. People ought to be thinking about, you know, what the history is here, but the dynamism of America, where we get our greatest scientists, where we get our greatest research, where we get some of the people who just have done some of the greatest things have either come first generation, second generation, third. I don't know about you. You look like you got a little Irish in you, but my people came from Sicily and Malta, right? And you think about what has happened over time, you know, and how America has formed into what we are. But back in the day, they didn't like the Irish very much. And then they didn't like the Italians.
Not well, Irish need apply.
Right? You remember that, right?
I remember it. God almighty. I remember at LSU, if you were Italian, you couldn't get into a fraternity. I remember that in my lifetime.
That's exactly okay, right. My Italian friends should not look. I'm Italian. I got it. But we shouldn't forget that.
Yeah, just think, you might not have gotten in a frat at LSU.
Right, exactly.
James, we got to let Mitch go, but wrap it up. You two know each other so well, and you know how damn smart he is. So a way to conclude.
I want to conclude this, that I've been in New Orleans since 2008. You're a lifelong resident. You're a two-time mayor. You represented us in the state legislature and everything else. Am I justified in starting to feel a little optimistic in a place that is not known for optimism?
Yeah, I think you are. You know, we had a rough patch for the last 8 years. We have a new mayor now,
right?
And we not only just have a new mayor who's going to be great because she's got good experience and she's level headed. She's hired a great team of people, so that's smart because you know mayors can't do anything without smart people around them. She also has a great relationship with her city council. So if the mayor and the city council are working together, she's got a reasonably good relationship with the governor, although he's a Republican, she's a Democrat. They seem to be working well together. That relationship is important.
She had no choice.
Yeah, well, that's true. But she could choose to be antagonistic. Yeah, but she could choose to fight with him. They seem to have reached an accommodation. What I would say to all mayors and governors across the country, and I would say this to the president, if he would dare listen, but he won't. When the president and the governor and a mayor on the federal, state, and local level are working together in communion, focused on a thing like fighting crime in a thoughtful way where everybody's got a piece of it, things actually get better. Same true is about creating jobs. Same thing is true about filling potholes. The same thing is true. But if everybody's fighting and screaming and yelling and the president for some reason says, well, I'm going to take money away from you because I don't like the eye shade you put on today, which is what Donald Trump does, then all of a sudden, you know, it causes this inability for government to work really, really well. And it's hard for it to work well under good circumstances. But when people are pulling against each other, and we've never had a president. There's not been a president that has sat in that office that has been so as divisive as Donald Trump. He just is driven. Look, he's driven by hatred. He's driven by the need to make money. He's driven by the need to have power. He's driven by the need to have retribution. That's what drives him. It's not, am I going to make the world a better place? Every decision he makes is predicated on one of those four things. And whether you're a conservative or a liberal in this country, you ought to be really concerned because it's really not about left versus middle versus right. Right now, what this is about is people who want to divide the country versus people who want to bring the country together across political divisions. And I would remind all of my fellow Americans and all my neighbors that the miracle of the Constitution, the miracle of the United States of America is the founding fathers understood that so many of us were so different that they created a framework that we could live together despite our differences, and we could do it peacefully if we respected each other's rights. But this group does not believe that. They believe that might is right, and they have been historically wrong. It will never last. They will hold it for a bit, but the American people will rise up. They will stop them. I don't exactly know how it's going to end. Hopefully it ends peacefully. But the way we do this is through electoral politics. And so the power's with the people. They can resist in the street peacefully. And then you've got to basically, if someone's abusing their power, you have to take it from them. Just like you would treat your teenage kid who drove the car when they weren't supposed to the wrong way, you take it away from them. And I think the American people are going to do that.
James, we could talk to and learn from Mitch Leiters for hours. But you know what? He's got a lot of other demands. There are a lot of people here who want to talk to Mitch Landrieu.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Always great talking.
Thank you so much. Thank you, James.